Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 237, which is featuring Andra and Yaroslav from our Corona team. They were in town for SIGGRAPH, and we decided we were going to do a podcast with them because they have done some really cool stuff in Corona, which they talked about a little bit at Total Chaos, but I decided we should do a podcast about it, and I'm actually writing a blog about it. But the subject is caustics, and yes, a lot of you guys know, we've had caustics for a long time, but what we're doing in Corona is a little bit different. Actually, it's a lot different, and it's really, really interesting. The gist is basically that we have been ignoring caustics for too long, and what Andra and Yaroslav and the Corona team guys are doing, and Martin especially, who's been programming a lot of the stuff, basically they're making it so that caustics are literally a one-button solution and minimizes the impact of your rendering time, which is a big deal. And when you start doing that, you start to realize that caustics are very, very important. They're a big part of the image that we have been missing for many, many years. And we've been just treating it as a luxury that we just can't afford. And that is no longer the case. So really, really interesting talk with them about what they're doing, what their algorithm is, how they're doing it, and you know, what their strategy is. So it was really great to have them on, and I really appreciate the talk we had. And you guys will learn a lot. This is a very technical talk, so but you guys will learn a whole lot from it. I know that I certainly have. Couple of announcements. Our demo reel is out. So we presented it at SIGGRAPH, but now we're putting it up online. If you guys want to go check it out, please do. It's up on YouTube. If you want to check it out there, just go to our Chaos Group TV channel on YouTube and check out our latest demo reel. It was really cool. A lot of great work went into it, and we really want to thank all the people who contributed to the amazing work in that demo reel. Another announcement, I know I said it before, but V-Ray for Houdini is out. It is officially out. And you're wondering, I thought it was out. Well, yes, it's been in beta for a long time, but now it's no longer in beta. So it is a full-on product. You can buy it. You can try it as well. So feel free to go to our website and, you know, try it out and see what it is. It's a really cool product, and we've been working on it a long time, and it's proved out to be pretty darn useful. So really excited about that. Other announcements, D2 is coming up, which is the conference in Vienna, and we will be there. I won't personally be there, but Chaos Group is definitely going to be present at that event. So if you're going to be at D2 in Vienna, which is in August 22nd, love to see you there. So exciting to be a part of that. Chaos Group SIGGRAPH 2019 roundup was really great. We had some really great talks during SIGGRAPH, and in the coming weeks we will be releasing some of those talks in videos. So we have a video of Vlado's talk, and another video of Andra's talk, and another one of Yaroslav's talk. So this will cover caustics as well. So I know that Andra was basically talking about it during this podcast, how he's talking about it at SIGGRAPH. So that that talk will also be available. Okay, with that being said, please enjoy this fabulous podcast with Andra and Yaroslav and the Corona team.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
First of all, excited to have you guys here at SIGGRAPH. I've been wanting to have you guys back here for a while to talk about stuff, always because you guys do very interesting work. But I started looking into this caustic thing that you guys are doing, and it got me very intrigued. Caustics has been sort of like a luxury feature that people sometimes think about and then don't use because it's too complicated to use, or they only think it contributes a small amount to the lighting of a scene. But you guys have changed all of those misconceptions about caustics, I think. But let's start with a definition of caustics, if we can. A layman's definition. Like, if you can explain caustics to someone on the street, what would you say they are?
Yeah, I have like half of my presentation tomorrow is actually about this.
Okay.
because there is a difference. It's subtle what it means for user and what it means for the programmer, and there are some implications for this.
Right.
But for the user, and I guess that's the most important definition, it's like anytime your light passes through glass or water, mm-hmm. or even mirror, and it gets focused.
Focused.
So it's, you see some white spot, and it's because the light is focused into one place.
Right.
So that's what we usually call caustics.
Okay. So it's rays of light that have transmitted through or bounced off a medium in some ways. But bouncing is a, because you could use GI as a bounce as well, right?
Well, well, I guess the important thing is that the light actually passes through or is reflected of something that is really glossy. So, I mean, like, what's important in architecture is that, you know, like, any kind of, like, light shades that are made of glass, they actually focus light in some weird ways. And so this is something that you would usually replace by this, you know, IES profiles or something. But, like, in fact, all of these are just caustics. Everything, all the light is actually just after the emission, it gets reflected of these cases, and all of that is a caustic light. So, in a way, all of the illumination that we have in our interiors is caustic, right? So
it is. Okay. Yeah. You could generalize it that way, and that's very true. But for people who have done CG for a long time, right. who like have a loose definition of what a caustic is, they know of light bouncing around a surface in some ways. But they usually refer to that as a diffuse global illumination, right? So it's a secondary bounce of light that comes off a diffuse surface and scatters, like a GI caustic scatters in all direction from that point, right? But a caustic is focused, right?
Well, I think this is a loose definition, and I think like what we're trying to do is, go exactly in this direction where we don't actually really have to ask ourselves what is a caustic, because the reality is such that light simply bounces around, and sometimes it bounces off a surface that's diffuse, other times off of a surface that's more specular, and sometimes off of a surface which is somewhere in the middle. And so at some point you will start calling it a caustic, other times you will be calling it a bounce light.
Right.
But it's the same thing. Physically, the physical reality is the same thing.
It's almost the same thing as the difference between diffuse and specular, because at some point it becomes specular, at some point it becomes diffuse.
Exactly. Right. So essentially all of this is global illumination, all of this is what, you know, the nature, what's happening in the nature, and all of this is what we are trying to simulate in the render. In such a way that you really don't have to think about it all that much, you know, like you just turn it off. You say, I want to simulate the scene, and out comes the simulation. If the lights and the objects are in the right configuration, there will be a caustic. If not, there will be no caustic, but you don't have to worry about it.
So why have we been ignoring this concept for so long? Or there has been caustics in renderers for years, but a lot of people just don't use them.
Right.
Why don't they use them?
Well, it's simple. It's difficult to compute.
Okay.
And historically, we were happy. Like, think about global illumination. That's when you look far enough, it's a fairly recent concept. People were not really using global illumination in movies until a few years ago.
Right.
And same goes with some other concepts like even linear workflow, advanced BRDFs.
Right.
And so on. These are all fairly new.
Yes.
And caustics are just one thing that's really difficult to compute. It all comes down to this concept that it's difficult to compute,
right?
But it's easy to somehow remove from the image. And in most cases, you don't see the difference immediately.
Right.
There are some cases where it fails spectacularly, like pool scenes or some glass details, but in sometimes the effect is just subtle, and when you remove it, you get plausible result, but it's not 100% physically correct. Yes. But you have your result, you have your image, you can send this to the client, you will get paid.
Yep.
But it's really the same as concept of ray tracing, global illumination, everything like this. We are just introducing these things into the mainstream workflows one by one as the hardware gets better and the software gets better.
Yeah.
And Caustic is just next step in this evolution.
That makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. You brought up movie industry, right? And this is something that I've been saying for a long time. I've been saying that basically the architecture field embraced global illumination long before the visual effects field did, and used it in production and for everything they did because it was such an important part of the illumination of an interior scene or anything of this nature. Visual effects embraced it much later because they didn't necessarily have the need for it until they started to really ray trace things. You guys have also embraced it, and what all the examples that I saw that you guys have done so far have been centered around architecture in some ways. And I think it's really interesting because it really brings up the point again of now that architects have embraced global illumination and everything looks correct with general global illumination, this is the missing part that they have been not, that that takes it to the next level. And I feel that architecture is a really interesting place to start with this example. What do you guys think about that?
Well, yes. I think yes.
Yeah.
No, actually, what I wanted to follow up a little bit on the question that you asked before.
Yeah.
And then I will get back to this.
Yeah.
I think the reason we have been not using caustics is that, you know, it's really an artifact of the technology that we are using to compute it, and it's just that when you think about it, caustics are not so difficult to compute. It's just that the algorithms that you are using to compute them are very difficult than the ones that the usual ray tracing or path tracing algorithms. You really have to start tracing rays, you know, from the light sources toward the camera, which is not what you would be normally doing to render your image. So,
from the user point of view, you mean almost
programming point of view.
Okay,
and that's why there's always this kind of like a solver, which is something that is traditionally has been something on the side, something completely separated from the main render.
Right,
and this I think created this notion that caustic is something that is like a separate light effect, like as if it was a different physical reality than the normal light in the scene. But yeah. It's not true. It's not true. It's just a part of what's happening in the surrounding environment around us. And this concept that this is something on the side is really just a consequence of the way the software was written, and that's a consequence of how the computation actually goes. So I think this notion of the caustic being something separate, something on the side, is just going to disappear as we get to the point where we have an algorithm that just does everything all together. And this the solver that we have introduced now in Corona is a step forward in that direction. Yeah. And I really think, so right now, it is still the case that someone needs to go and check, you know, like we have this like one checkbox, you know, turn on the caustic solver, but it really shouldn't be there. It really shouldn't be there, right? I mean, the holy grail is that it just gets computed
automatically,
no matter
right.
what.
I mean, you still have a checkbox to turn on GI, but
yeah,
Corona doesn't
have a checkbox.
In
per
theory,
se,
you
actually.
Are able to disable GI,
right?
But I hope nobody does it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But by now, everyone turns on GI by default, right?
Yeah.
But now you're saying caustic should be the same condition.
It should be the same, and especially in architecture. Like,
right.
As we're sitting here in this apartment, essentially, like,
everywhere.
When I look at this countertop, you know, this oven here, everything is caustic illumination. You know?
Right.
So there's really absolutely no reason to think that we that caustics should ever be off. It's right. Really like the only reason for it is now that it still takes a little more time to compute, but...
Well, there's two parts of it. I think it takes longer to compute is one thing. I mean, in traditional ways, not the way you guys are doing it, I think is revolutionary. But the way that that people have done it in the past is they had to use photon mapping. Photon mapping in a way, like even in V-Ray right now, you know, it's complicated to use. It's you got a trial and error. It looks completely different illumination from the rest of the scene. So it's just very different. And people only used it in if they had to for like a pool maybe, or they wanted a wine glass to have the correct caustic on the table. But that was about it. Now, the way that I saw what you guys have done, it's really made me realize how important caustics are on every level. Because even one of the things that, for example, happens a lot, and you guys mentioned this in your talk, is light coming through a window is caustic as it's coming through the glass, right? And light bouncing off a mirror is caustic. Now, what we've done to, because if we actually treated everything as a, you know, as a caustic, then or no, and then turned caustic off, then there'd be no light coming through the window, technically, right?
Right.
So we turn the glass of the window into a transparent object to allow shadows to come through. Is that, tell me if that's the correct, give me the better definition of how we traditionally treated a glass in a window, because it's not a caustic light, right?
Well, that really goes down to whether you consider caustic a visual effect or whether you define caustic as a, in terms of what you need to do to kind of like to simulate that that kind of a light path. You know, if you say my definition of a caustic is any light that has been emitted from a light source and has been transmitted through a glass,
right,
then of course all light in an interior coming from the outside will be defined as a caustic.
Right.
But it's not something that you know, a normal person would say. Like for a normal person, it's really just this light that's actually focused.
Right.
So
what I found was interesting. Okay, I'll tell you this, because the one that really sort of blew my mind, or put the bell off of like, ding, I figured it out. You guys showed a render, which was a scene, a typical architecture render scene of an interior, right? And you had window there with window panes, and you showed, here's what it is without the caustic, where you treat the light as transparency coming through. And you saw, you know, the soft shadows because there was a sun that's a slight area light or whatever, but you saw the slight shadow there. And then you treated it as a caustic. And it was a subtle difference, but so much more realistic in a sense, because what happened is along those edges of where there was normally a shadow, you saw different granularity of intensity, like the light would get a little bit brighter, a little bit darker, a little bit thicker, a little bit darker. And it was all because of the way that the light came through as a caustic as opposed to a shadow.
Yeah, I think it was because we applied bump map to the window.
Well, you need to, right?
To simulate the imperfections.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Now possible with caustics.
Right, and it looked so much more realistic, much more realistic. And I think that's something that is, you start to realize like, oh my gosh, you know, why haven't I been using this?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have some users that now started doing this in their renders, and they're really happy about this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of course, some clients might not want this because they want to claim they have the perfect windows.
But if you make it just very subtle, that edge looks so much richer. The shadow edge looks so much richer. I think it was a really successful idea to get the idea across as well. And even just the example with the mirror, you had a mirror on the wall, and then suddenly you saw caustic on the table from the mirror. I mean, I'm just looking at, like, in our, this is audio, but I'm just looking at this glass table here. There's a light there, and there's a nice caustic edge going all along the wall that is everywhere. You know? So I think it's very important. But what did you guys, when you guys thought about doing this caustic, you had a couple of goals that you want to make sure that people would use it on a more regular basis to think about it. So how did you guys implement this?
Okay, so Well, when it comes to the goal was completely clear. This should be absolutely, well, transparent.
Mm-hmm.
transparent caustic silver. So something that people just don't have to think about, and it just happens. So we wanted to be sure that you don't have to think about number of photons and any such thing, and it's just going to be there. And so the the process to getting to this point was actually quite long. We started quite a long time before an implementation in Corona.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have been thinking and wanting to put caustics into Corona for many years now. Okay, it was something that was high on the priority list essentially since the beginning. But just wrapping our heads around how this should be done so that it actually going to be this like one click caustic solver took quite a bit of time. And so it started with like a sandbox implementation where we were testing some ideas about how to essentially automatically set all of these parameters. And this was a collaboration with the university, and this ended up as a paper being published at the rendering symposium. And then we thought, okay, so we have a sandbox implementation. This was working quite well. And so one of our main developers that's focusing on light transport, Martin, he took this paper and he started porting it in Corona. Mm-hmm. And then he found out that all of these things that we originally thought were working already quite well,
mm-hmm.
well, they didn't really. You start using it in production, you get real scenes, and things just don't work out all that well. So so some of the basic elements, the algorithm that we use to determine the number of photons and so on, because under the hood, it's just some kind of photo mapping, okay? But it's perfectly hidden from the user. So there's some adaptive way of figuring out the number of photons. And another super important component of this is this guiding component, this component which determines where the photons should actually be going from the light sources, right? Because you want to make sure that they go in the relevant part of the scene. And so this was something where Martin has been really very, very creative. And he essentially changed all of this idea. So we're using a Metropolis sampler there. And this brings another, the moment you go into Metropolis sampling, it's a Pandora box of technology problems that you need to solve. So
okay.
It's been quite a ride, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you're still using some level of photon mapping or photon mapping, but you guys are doing all the decisions that were previously made by the user. You're doing them for the user.
Yes.
And you're doing caustics on all materials and all lights, I'm assuming. Or you're...
Yes.
Yes.
You can exclude lights actually for artistic control, but you don't have to.
Okay.
By default, every light has caustics.
Right. Now, that's the first problem solved, because when I have to do caustic, I'm like, I got to sit here and figure out how many photons I have to shoot. Yeah. It's a pain in the butt, right? But now you've solved it by saying, I just turn it on and then it will figure it out for you. And I'm sure that based on the renderer could probably do a better job of figuring out than the user trying to guess numbers, right?
Yes.
So that's basically where you guys are. Now, the other big problem with caustics is that they were really slow. Now, maybe that could be user error because a user doesn't know how to use caustics correctly, but generally speaking, your render times can go way up and you get just a little bit of an effect on there.
Mm.
What is the render hit that you guys are getting on using caustics on these things?
Okay, so definitely depends on the scene.
Of course.
And what we actually did is that we estimate if you need to compute caustics or not,
mm-hmm.
in different parts of the scene. So it really depends what is the percentage of your scene that actually has visible caustics in it.
Right.
When there's only one specific spot where you see them, then it's pretty fast.
Right.
But if you render something like a pool where half of your image is caustics, then it will be more.
Right.
And so Of course, we would like to have no overhead.
Right.
Well, should be ideal, but so far it didn't happen.
Right.
But then we targeted the goal to make it not slower than 2 times. So the overhead shouldn't make it more than 2 times slower. So doubling the render time.
That's still pretty good. That's still very good. Well,
it's good, but it's too much for us. So
it's better than it's been, right? And so I think if people see the value of the caustics, the caustics ads that they're seeing, they're willing to take a 2x hit, right?
Some users they do, some users they don't. We have users who render for 48 hours every image, and we have users who do 10-minute renders. So
right.
It varies. But the Corona version 4 was originally was released with, we claimed 2x, 2x overhead, and most users confirmed this.
Right.
And then we discovered a little bug in the code.
Right.
There was one line of code was a bit wrong.
Uh-huh.
And the line of code actually made 85% of all photons not used.
Really?
So, yeah, these things happen. You know, you have this, like, maybe two years worth of research and effort ultimately culminating in the release of caustics, and then you have one line of code, and 85% of all your photons shot is now not being used.
So it was 85% inefficient.
Yeah. And it wasn't that we would discard 85% of photons. We would still store them, and we would still search them in every point where we interpolate.
Right.
And then we would just not use them.
Okay.
So that was fixed in the hotfix. And what we measured is that the overhead was cut in half, basically.
Right.
It unfortunately doesn't scale like 85% reduction.
Right.
So it was just cut in half. So now the overhead is 50%.
That's pretty good.
And then Martin did some more optimizations, and he reported like 25% more reduction. So we are cutting into this overhead.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
we are going lower.
Yeah. That's really good.
So right now there's also, so one of the parts where the overhead is coming from is like lots of data structure searching. So we're now working with the Intel guys to provide some optimized data structures for that. And so that should be another reduction of overhead.
Through Embry or something?
Yeah. It's going to be part, it's already part of Embry, but I actually don't know what the status is. But yeah, it's through Embry.
Right.
Yeah. We'll talk to the guys here. They are here at the conference. And
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's really great. Okay, now we're going to get into a little more challenging conversation. Because there are a lot of the renderers out there that claim that they have caustics on by default by just doing brute force. A lot of unbiased renderers claim that, like, we have caustics are on.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So let's talk about the difference between those and what you guys are doing.
Okay, so as I said, you know, the difference between so what we have in Corona is a solver that automatically detects which caustics or which reflections of light are better resolved by the usual tracing from the camera and which need to be resolved by photons.
Okay,
and that really depends on the specific configuration. You know, like you may have a configuration where you have a light source, you know, glass of wine. There's going to be some caustic, and then you make the light source a little larger, and now it turns out that you don't actually need photons anymore because the path tracer is going to resolve this configuration just out of the box without the need for any photons.
Right.
So this is something that we're actually able to detect automatically. So again, the user doesn't need to worry about it. The number of photons is going to scale down, and we're going to resolve such a situation essentially by the default path tracer without any extra overhead.
Okay.
So in this sense, this solution that we have right now, it's kind of like it's an automatic blend between what I believe these other renderers, these so-called unbiased renderers, would be doing, and what the edge cases that really need the photons, where the photons are going to bring the performance and bring the sharp the really sharp caustics. Mm-hmm. So this kind of a blend, this kind of a, you know, like finding the right spot between these two algorithms, this is something that happens automatically in the solver that we have.
Right.
So in that respect, I think that we can boldly make the same claim that they're doing, that it's just that it's just a matter of technological choice, you know. So
right. There was another thing that was interesting that Vlado mentioned to me in a conversation, and I may have gotten it wrong, so you can correct me, but or maybe you can tell me what he says. But he said that he was giving a specific case, right, where let's take a pool, because it's very well known as a situation. So you have a pool, you have some ripples on the pool, you can see the bottom of the pool, and then there's a wall next to the pool, right? So there's a sunlight coming down, catches on the ripples of the pool. You will traditionally see caustics on the wall of the pool, and then you should see caustics on the bottom of the pool as well, right? Mm-hmm. So what Vlado is claiming is that some renderers that claim to be, you know, have caustics on by default, when they detect that caustic ray, they treat it as a projection instead, instead of actually tracing that ray through a medium, right, in a certain way. So that in the example of the pool, you would see caustics on the wall because it is bounced off the surface, but because the pool is refracting, the caustics on the bottom are refracting, you wouldn't actually see caustics on the bottom of the pool. Is that true?
It's not specifically because it's refraction, but it's the certain configuration of the bounces.
Okay.
There's one pattern of bounces which is called, in the research it's called SDS, specular diffuse specular.
Okay.
And it basically means indirect caustics.
Okay.
It's caustics visible through reflection or refraction. So you have your caustics from your glass or from your pool,
right,
but you don't see the focused light directly. You see it through another reflection or refraction.
Right.
And because of some reasons, in this scenario, some of the algorithms, they just stop working.
Right. So would result in you would see caustics on the wall, but you wouldn't see caustics on the bottom of the pool,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or if you had a mirror next to the wall that has the caustics, you wouldn't see the caustics in the mirror, right? But you guys do that. You see the wall, you see the reflections, you see all the caustics all the way through.
Of course. Yeah,
right.
With the solver that we have, you can see all of these caustics, whether they're directly visible or whether you see them through some mirror. I think claiming that you have a caustic solver when you cannot do reflected caustics, it's an over exaggerated claim, because in a way, since all of the caustics, they all have always have some kind of really specular reflective surfaces around. So if there is a caustic, there is a very, very good chance that you will actually see it indirectly. And if you have a solver that cannot resolve these indirectly visible caustics, then I don't think you have a caustic solver, really.
I agree. So. I agree. And I didn't realize that was the case in a lot of ways, but I agree. Mm. So tell me a little bit more about your talk. What are some of the other things that you guys are going to be covering in your talk when you're talking about caustics?
Okay, so it's always challenging to pick out the specific topic to talk about.
Sure.
Because, you know, you'll have different people in the audience. There will be people that are more on the artistic side, more on the technical side. And so what I decided to try is that to show the technical details behind the caustics from the point of view of artists.
Okay.
And specifically, I want to focus on the topic why it's difficult to, or why it was difficult to render caustics.
Okay. And why are they difficult? Besides the reasons we mentioned before, is there other reasons that are difficult besides some of the reasons we mentioned? Or is it just because, the way I was thinking about it is, I think of the room as a, if you think of the room as a volume of where photons are passing, right? the focus of the caustic makes it hard to land, right? When you're tracing a bunch of rays, it's hard to find the specific caustic that you're trying to find, right?
Well, I would say the most most general view you can think of is in reality, what happens is that you have photons that are generated in the lights and they bounce around the world and then they hit your eye and you see.
Right.
And so in this approach, you have the caustics automatically, but you have some problems. Like when you take photos with your digital camera,
yep,
you have problems that when it's a low light situation, like at night, you will have noise image, right?
Right, yep.
So with this approach, it's problematic when there's not enough light.
Right.
And also what happens is that most of the photons, they really go in completely different direction than where you are.
Right.
So what we do for the last 30 years in this field is that we reverse the direction of,
right,
of the particles. So we don't trace any stuff from the lights, we trace it from the camera.
Right.
And that way you cover what you see directly perfectly. So you have several orders of magnitude faster convergence.
Right.
But it's no longer the case that the entire scene is resolved the same. Now you start having these very selective problems like with the caustics.
So you could miss something very easily, right?
It's like you make everything several orders of magnitude faster,
right,
except for caustics.
Right.
So that's maybe a point I wanted to mention also with the discussion about the other renderers being unbiased or having caustics.
Yeah.
There's this thing, when we talk about caustics being slow, it's important to know what we are comparing to.
Yeah.
Because there are engines that had caustics since the beginning and people would have them always on. But the thing is, or it would have low overhead,
mm-hmm,
but the thing is that the baseline you are comparing to is quite slow. And what's challenging with Corona is that Corona is really fast, or I hope it is.
Yeah.
I hope most people feel like it's fast. And it's challenging to add caustics without the overhead because people are used to some level of speed.
Right.
And so when we are talking about overhead, we are not talking about absolute numbers, like it takes 10 seconds to compute caustics or something like this. We are talking like now it takes 50% longer.
Right.
But based 50% relative to something that was pretty fast.
So basically you're saying the other solutions, they may have taken 12 hours to do the render and then it takes 12 and a half hours. You're going from like 15 minutes to 30 minutes, but still.
Yeah, but in this situation you see the performance hit way more.
Yes, I get it. It's like fuel efficiency. If you have a really heavy truck, your fuel efficiency is no different whether you're going slow or fast. But if you have a compact car, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. So when we are asking the question like why do we even make the difference between the caustics and the rest of the GI in rendering, well, there's no difference in the reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's because in reality, the photons are traced in a way that doesn't make the difference between caustics and the
sure.
rest. Or sorry, it doesn't make the difference between the two,
yep,
and it resolves them with the same speed.
Right.
But in rendering, we reverse the direction and we use some other tricks like light sampling.
So your solver, as you said, you split where you go regular path tracing or go photon mapping. When you start to go photon mapping, you reverse the direction of the ray,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
So mm-hmm, that's exactly what you're doing. It's like, okay, let's pick rays that go forward and let's pick rays that go backwards.
Exactly, yeah.
That's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so it's all about, like, since this this whole simulation in the renderer under the hood is just this probabilistic, you know, this sampling-based algorithm. So it's all about considering what is the likelihood that you will, you know, that you will find the right light path that will connect the light source all the way to the camera.
Right.
And for some specific cases, it's just so much easier, so much more likely that you will be able to do it when tracing from the camera. And in other cases, it's much more likely to happen when you trace from the light source. And those are exactly the cases that corresponds to caustics, and this is the reason why when you want to resolve caustics, you would start from the light source, because then the likelihood, the chance that you will actually make that full connection all the way to the camera becomes much, much higher.
Right.
So the thing becomes much more efficient.
Yeah, so the reason why caustics are difficult is because 40 years ago we made the trade where everything got 1,000 times faster except for caustics.
Right.
And at the time, like imagine 40 years ago, at the time it was pretty good trade. So we took the trade.
I think we
were kind of stuck there.
So now you're making a solution now that basically says, I'm going to choose when to do that, right? I'm going to choose when the ray goes forward and when the ray goes backwards. And that's really smart. Mm-hmm. Now, just so people know, because there's another example, I'm just jumping a little bit over here, but if you try to brute force a scene, let's say, and you just, as another example, if you try to brute force everything, but still try to find the caustics, right? But all your rays are going forward mm-hmm. or from the camera out, right? You could every now and then find a caustic ray.
Oh, yeah.
And then you would get a big spot on your image somewhere or what everyone calls fireflies, right? Yeah. So those are the challenging ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. those are exactly the proof of the fact that...
caustics shouldn't be solved that way, right?
that caustics shouldn't be solved that way, but that, theoretically, you could. And that it's really just all about just the chance of this connection being made, you know. So the fact that you have these fireflies is really just the proof of the low likelihood that you will make that connection all the way from the camera to the light source for these kinds of caustic spots when you go from camera. It may still happen, and it will happen. If you let it run for long enough, it will converge. But just the likelihood that it will happen is so incredibly low that... You know that when it happens you get that firefly there because it didn't happen a million times before, now it happened, so you see it in the image as a complete outlier.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was one of the challenges when these papers about the caustics started to appear at some point mm-hmm. was that there was no way to compute the reference. Because when you do research and you implement some new method to compute something, you need to compare this to some ground truth. And you cannot compare your method to your method because they would mean it's correct by definition.
Right.
So you need some other way to compute the same thing and compare the two to make sure that it's really 100% correct.
Right.
And at the time I was talking to the guys and they really had the problem, like no matter what time they used, they couldn't compute the reference.
Right.
And they ran into some weird issues that you would never imagine running into. Like after 1 million passes, you actually run out of precision of frame buffer. You can no longer put new samples into the frame buffer because after about 1 million passes, it just stops updating because of some precision issues.
Wow.
And you need to code new frame buffer because of this.
So you cannot technically even go to an infinite amount of passes to get it because a frame buffer would not be able.
You could, but you just have to reprogram your frame buffer.
You can have infinite number of passes if you have infinite memory, so that's
right,
okay.
Sure.
And infinite time also. Yeah. But yeah, those usually the reference images in these papers, they were something like 2 week render. For a really small image, like 800 pixels, very simple scene.
Right.
And it ran for like 2 weeks. And that was because the deadline for the paper was in 2 weeks and 1 day.
Yeah.
Right.
But, that being said, there is some middle ground, okay? So there are some situations where, you know, there is a caustic, but it's not so well-defined. The light source may not be so incredibly small. So the chances of hitting the light source just by going through the camera, it becomes a bit more likely, and those are exactly the situations where you can actually... These are the ideal test situations for development of the caustic solver, because you can compute the same caustic going from the camera or going from the other side, and then you can verify that you're getting the same result, which is exactly what you should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the way it's implemented in Corona. So just the fact that we're using a photon map doesn't mean that our results are wrong or biased or incorrect in any way. Like, if you have a caustic that you can compute from the camera in a turn of the caustic solver, you will get that caustic. And if you decide to turn on the caustic solver because you like to, mm-hmm. well, you will get the same caustic, okay? It will not change. It will not change the appearance of your image, and that I think is very important. Yeah. Because it goes in this direction that caustic is not. Yeah, that caustic is just something that's there, you know, that has its own appearance. Whether you computed it one way or the other, it should just appear the same, and that's what happens in Corona.
Right, right.
I think it's really smart. I've been very impressed with it. I think that there's other ways to think about it. I think, you know, the other thing is, like, a lot of people clamp their caustics out sometimes or other things like that. There's always these tricks that people do to try to solve those problems. But you guys are just saying, no, let's see all the caustics as much as we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... What else is unique about the way that you guys are doing it, do you think?
I think, like we said, most of the things that are important, I think, have been said.
Yeah.
Eventually, I would... Eventually, I think, like, we should really get to the point where, you know, the checkbox just isn't there at all.
The checkbox isn't there.
Yeah, the checkbox.
That's where you want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's really just a matter of spending more time on the implementation, okay? I mean, this is very much on, this is not just an implementation of something that is known and people have been doing before. This is really a completely new development, and this is always something that just takes time. And you do it one way, then you realize that you can still improve it and just keep going. So, like, okay, we have some caustic solver, but it's really just the first shot at what it can be. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we can, like, this whole overhead thing, this is something that can be, in my opinion, we can get it down to something that will really be completely negligible. And that just people wouldn't have to worry about it, even think about it, you know. Like, the problem is, you know, like, sometimes you get into this situation where, okay, so you have a overhead which is 25%, but just this, like, stress, I think that there is some certain psychological stress in the people that is created by this decision making, whether or not they should turn this checkbox on and off. And I think, like, this is... The fact that such checkboxes and such choices didn't have to be made in the first place are really the reason why Corona was successful, right?
I'll tell you why it's going to happen. I think because you guys are very good at this, you architecture will turn it on, right? And architecture will turn it on because they will see value in that thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The same way that they saw value in global illumination when they started turning it on 20 yeah. plus years ago, right? Yeah, yeah. They can't go back after they've turned it on. And then visual effects... did not turn on global illumination for years because they said, oh no, we'll just fake it with ambient occlusion or we'll do yeah. whatever. And so they did that for a long time until they realized, like, you know what? It looks so much better with real GI, yeah. right? And so eventually, like, you know, they're going to have to turn it on. And the same thing is going to happen with caustics, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really like the same step as going from, you know, a rendering without GI into rendering with GI. I mean, rendering with GI, yes, admittedly, it's much, much slower than doing just direct illumination with some fakes.
Right.
But just everyone has it on because the image looks right, okay?
Right.
And it's slower, but this is a part of the game, okay?
Right.
Now we add the caustics, it's going to be a little bit slower, but just at some point people will not even think about how it used to be when it wasn't on, okay?
Right.
It will just be a natural part of the simulation of the visual world that's around us, and people will just stop thinking about it.
Yeah. And I think things even like cars emit so many caustics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this is one of these examples where, you know, we were, at the beginning of the talk, we were talking about the windows. And so one thing is like window panes that are totally flat, but then of course in the cars you have all, you know, the windshields and everything.
They have a curve.
These are very curved, and
right.
this of course focuses light quite a bit.
Right.
And it does create some, you know, some visual features that you really want to have there, you know, because
yep.
otherwise the image of the interior of the car just starts looking completely flat, and this is just not right, you know. In
yeah.
reality, like when you walk out and you look at a car, in fact, there are caustics created by the curved shape of the windshield on
right.
the interior of the car. And, of course, those are the things that just should be there, and you know, you shouldn't be even thinking about it.
Sure, but even there's caustics all around the sidewalk, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
there's
true.
Tons
yeah.
of caustics,
sure, sure,
you know.
Yeah,
I mean, there's caustics inside the headlights, which is another important part of things.
Oh, yeah.
So
yes.
So there's so many caustics everywhere that you look.
Mm.
And in fact, I think one of my favorite quotes from Vlado when he started really talking about this, he says, you know, I used to play this game when people would send, you know, a render or photo game, you know, that game
oh, yeah.
when they do, Autodesk
oh, yeah.
did a bunch of them or whatever. And he said it was very easy for me because all I would do is I would look to say, if I see caustics, then I know it's a photograph. And if I don't see caustics, then I know it's a render. But now with Corona, I can't tell the difference.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's an important thing.
I still think there are some issues in like controllability of the effects.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it just happens that you have some reflection of this on the ceiling, and then the client comes and says, I don't want this splotch on the ceiling, and you need to do something about this.
What do you do about it if you're taking a photograph?
Well,
you Photoshop it out.
Photoshop it, or you or you use polarization filter,
right?
Or you change your lighting. And basically, why I want to mention this is actually because of a story from Total Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Total Chaos in Sofia, not the one at SIGGRAPH.
Mm-hmm.
Is when we are doing the rehearsal of the keynote, I ran through my presentation like in really fast mode,
mm-hmm.
just making sure all the videos play and so on. And which they did at the rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
not at the
not
that,
yeah.
actual talk. And afterwards, I talked to somebody in the audience, and he was a photographer, and he said, like, I don't really understand this talk, but it seems like you implemented polarization filter, right? You're removing the reflections. And I said, no, that's the before and after are switched.
Right.
So
I depolarized the
yeah,
light.
When you look at this from some photographer point of view,
yeah,
you would think like we are giving users the option to remove the caustics finally.
Right.
So
it's, yeah, because caustics could be seen as an artifact in photography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely 100% caustics maximalist. I still think there's some degree of control that needs to be there.
Right.
And it's, again, we are talking a lot about GI because it's really the same situation
yeah.
as if GI, like the adoption and reasons why it wasn't right. computed at first and so on.
Right.
And with GI, everybody uses GI now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when for a lot of people still have to use some overrides, for example, for floor.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have some saturated floor, like brown,
mm-hmm.
then your walls don't get brown.
Right.
Because it doesn't look good or a client doesn't want it and so on. So you still need to remember that, you know, we need artists to be artists, to have control over what they are creating.
Sure. But I agree, but the discussions about the, you know, the red carpet makes the walls red, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's gone away for a lot of point of view. It used to be a lot because they were so used to seeing very, you know, graphic looking images of rendering. And they're like, why is it? But the more it looks like a photograph, the more it looks like a photograph. At which point, treat it like a photograph.
Right.
And then, you know, you can color correct walls in Photoshop or whatever you want to do. Or, you can use mats or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think actually, yes, it's true that artists will always want some controllability. And I don't think this is specific to caustics. This is just something that they want for various reasons. And it's good to think about these reasons, okay? So, for example, when you think about this reason of like a, you know, a wall that would be coloring your wall, a floor that would be coloring your walls in some way that is more exaggerated than you would like to, mm-hmm. well, then maybe this the reason is that all your reflectances of your surfaces are actually set in a way that's just not physically correct, you know?
Right.
So you have a physically correct render, but the appearance of the things that are around us are, well, a combination of things. And it's the real values of all the reflectances and the parameters of all the materials together with, you know, the light transport, the bouncing of the light on these surfaces. And of course, you adopt an algorithm that is perfectly simulating the bouncing of the light, and you still keep the values of your materials being completely unrealistic, then you will be getting results that are unrealistic, right? So these things just go hand in hand, and it's an evolution where, you know, like, of course, we have physically based renderers, and together with that, we need to have physically based assets. Mm-hmm. And only these two things together will eventually get us to the place where our results are looking realistic out of the box. And then maybe some of the tweaks that we are doing, we will not have to do them anymore, because in fact they are not a matter of artistic control. They are just a matter of fixing things that we have done wrong. Right?
So here's what I'm going to, I agree with you, although I'm not going to call it artistic control. Because if you're truly doing an artistic control, you are actually manipulating things not by trying to change the material property. That's an artist trying to take technical control over a situation. If they treated it naturally, if they were an artist, they would treat the lights and they would treat the cameras and they would treat that thing like a photographer would deal with it. Right. A photographer is not going to sit here and try to make the wall shinier, you know? I just think that that's not necessarily what's going to happen. So if I always try to, whenever I try to solve a problem with lighting myself as an artist, I try to solve it as a photographer would try to solve it, and assuming that the renderer got the physicality of the everything correct. And if something doesn't look right, I try to look back at my technical knowledge and go, what did I do to the material, like you just said, that caused it to not look realistic, and not necessarily assume that I have to reduce the GI on something. I remember I'll give you another example. There was someone, there was a very junior effects artist that I worked on with years and years ago, and wasn't a very good artist. And she was doing some particle and wind thing that was going on, and the things were acting very strange, but she was given an idea. It's like, we want these particles to flow in this direction. But they were doing some strange things because she couldn't quite figure out how to move the things in that direction. So she started animating gravity along the way so that it would move in a specific pattern. And like, that's not the way to solve the problem. Don't animate gravity. Think about what the other problem is.
Yeah, right? I think this is a very good analogy.
Right?
Yeah, this is exactly the way I see it.
So if you say, oh no, I'm going to, you know, reduce the amount of GI from the floor, that's not the correct way to solve it. I mean, maybe your floor is too red.
Exactly. That was exactly my point.
Yeah.
So they like to call it, you know, artistic control, but it's really not artistic control. It's just like fixing things that are broken somewhere deeper down the line.
I think that's an analogy that it would be really good to get to help the artist. If the artist, because I've actually noticed nowadays, compared to, you know, when I started 20 years ago or 30 years ago, whatever it was, there's a lot of artists that are extremely good that have actually have in lighting. That actually have much less technical knowledge because they now have tools that remove the need for them to be technical, right? They just accept the physicality of what it is. And in fact, the most successful ones out there are the ones that just don't mess with things too much. they use their artistic skills towards the sculpting and the lighting and the rendering.
Yes, it is... But it is. I think it's still the case that actually, if you want to do good renderings, you still have to have quite a bit of knowledge about, about the physics of light, about like how, what are the typical ranges of material parameters, and so on and so forth. Because like you have to set it by yourself, and so I think like the next step in the direction of freeing people of this burden of actually knowing, having this technical knowledge, is really providing sufficient amounts of assets so that people just don't have to set these parameters themselves. Like people will not have to think about, okay, so if I take a texture of wood, like by what number should I multiply it so that I get the right reflection of a real wood?
Right.
Because, you know, it's right there.
But but it's already set in the asset, right?
Yeah.
I agree. I think that there obviously should be some level of technical knowledge that you need, just like a photographer needs technical knowledge, right? But I think that rendering is becoming closer and closer to photography. And if you just let nature do its job or simulate nature it correctly, then you can get there in a better way.
It's a question. It's a question, actually, as we are speaking, it... Like, on the one hand, you can say, okay, so we are doing things in a virtual world, so there's definitely much more freedom. There's nothing that actually forces us to adhere to these laws of nature.
Right.
We can use any laws. We can create our own laws in this world, and that could potentially actually make us more creative. And so... You know, so one question is like these parameters, like do we really need to adhere to physically based parameters? But then on the other hand, I think like it just becomes so much easier when this virtual world just does behave the same way as the real world, because like you can have some consistent mental model about how light behaves, how things, like what makes things look the way they do. And you can apply this consistently, whether you are in real or virtual world. So I think that, like overusing this freedom that we have in the virtual world is probably not a very good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. We're just about an hour. So is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I know you said that your goal now is to just not have that button there at all. That would be good.
I would say definitely have it turned on by default.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the big step.
Oh, I do have another question. Are we going to start seeing this in other renders? Let's say like, you know, V-Ray or things like that. Is this something that's easy to implement or something to consider for other renderers as well?
It will happen.
Yeah.
I remember this meeting that we had with Vlado in Prague, and he came up and he was like, I really want to know what you guys did with the caustics, okay? So we spent quite some time explaining him what we did, and he says, I don't like this. I have a better way of doing it. So, so he has some plan. He has some plan there.
Okay.
And I'm really curious how this is going to pan out, and you know whether this is going to be faster or better in some way than what we have in Corona. It's possible. It was the same situation, actually. Like we rolled out our, you know, adaptive light solvers around the same time, and Vlado was this crazy guy who actually sat down over the weekend and actually imported the whole light solver from V-Ray into Corona so that he can compare it to the Corona solver. And so it was. There is a little bit of this, like a little bit of internal competition there, and I'm really curious what these guys are actually going to come up with. Yeah, but there it's definitely a plan. Like,
I think it's a good thing though that you guys come up with some interesting
things. Oh yeah, yeah,
and then we can just do that. And the back and forth has been very good, I think. In the
yeah, and there's always some elements like you that you can exchange. Like, you don't have to like say, okay, they have a better light solver, so we're going to just like throw away our light solver and like import this. There's always like you can always like break it down into some individual elements, and then you can just combine them together to get the best result. And like speaking about these light solvers, this is still something that that is eventually going to happen. That there's going to be some Uber solver that's going to take the better of the two worlds.
Right.
But just, you know, it's always a matter of having enough time to do it.
Okay. All right. Anything to add, Andre?
I'm sorry, it's about 4 a.m. in my internal clock.
So I know. I'm sorry. But
so I don't have anything.
That's okay. I think, well, first of all, thank you guys for coming down and you know, being able to do the podcast. I've been busy writing the Caustic blog post, which I probably will rewrite big portions of it after this podcast, because I think we've come up with some great analogies as we've discussed things. Same idea, but explain them in different ways. Mm-hmm. So I think it was good to talk about it. But yeah, thanks so much, guys. This has been great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And have a great rest of your SIGGRAPH and get some rest.
Yeah,
are you going to go and get some sleep at this point?
Have a great
SIGGRAPH. No, it's dinner with Vlado then.
Oh, dinner with Vlado. Okay, sounds good. All right, guys. Thank you.